You're listening to Around Comics, episode 245, brought to you by InStockTrades.com, Cadence Comic Art, and Netflix. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by, just like all of these fine folks. Hello, everyone.
A little peanut gallery action.
Yeah. Lots of dudes.
Yeah, really, man.
Lots of dudes with facial hair.
There was a chicken here earlier, but we scared her off.
It's a sausage fest tonight.
Always is. Damn. That's all right. Women get up in here and with their bad driving and their wanting to cook stuff.
And their just, makeup.
Yeah,
and their
makeup.
People sell biscotti here?
I got to put on my face for the show.
Well, so Tom. Welcome back.
Hey, yeah.
It's been like 2 months.
It's been like a month and a half since I've been on the show.
Yeah, folks, everyone.
I didn't listen to any of them.
For those who don't remember, this is Tom Caters.
You did too. Yes, I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel. Our the prodigal son has returned. Tom Caters, after his about a 6 week hiatus, you've been running all over the country, New York, Pittsburgh, Detroit.
I was not in Detroit at any point.
Oh, okay.
That's a fiction.
That is a
fiction. I enjoy that you gave that cover story. So in case people are trying to follow me.
Aha, you Detroit. Have been listening.
The Tom Maniacs were in Detroit scouring the empty warehouses.
Where is Joe Lewis? They were looking around there. Yeah.
Going to the empty Packard plant.
Yes. Yeah.
There's got to be a bar playing a Brewers game around here somewhere.
There was an article in the Chicago Reader about things to do in Detroit, and there was like a list of 10, and 5 of them were visiting abandoned businesses. Like a Packard plant, or like, and all the warnings were there will be squatters and there will be feral dogs. Like, oh, awesome.
That's
so
why I came.
I can go to the Motown Museum, and then right afterwards, I can sneak into the Packard plant and fight off some wild dogs, and it'll be like fucking Commandy in there.
Poor Chris Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
And Derek Coward and all those guys.
Yeah, no kidding.
Their little husk of a town that they
that's messed
that they
up,
live
man.
In. Yeah, it is. It's
you can buy a house for like $17,000 in Detroit.
I own 5 houses in Detroit. I didn't pay anything for
Caters
anything.
Estates. I heard about that.
I'm flipping them.
You're flipping
for $100.
Physically, literally flipping. Yeah, literally flipping. He's getting 5 guys to go and flip the houses.
And buy hardcovers with that $500.
Tipping a cow.
5 houses.
Nice. And our other guest this week, you know him as the voice of Word Balloon. He is, of course, Mr. John Suntris.
Boy, I want to just kick somebody's ass. I don't know. I had a cranky week, but I'm much better now that I'm away from the work.
You look good.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, I'm doing okay. Yeah, everything's good.
All right.
Psyched about next week.
Well, want to first let everyone know this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where you know by now, waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, omnibus editions, absolute editions, showcases, essentials, all of your collected edition needs, and everything is offered to you at a wonderful discounted price. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. We've been teasing you with the Justice League International Volume 1 as our book club, and yes, we are going to be recording that soon. I promise Tom. Now that Tom's back, we're going to get to that.
I brought my single issues with me, thinking that tonight would be the night.
Maybe next week for Wizard World. Oh, you're going to be out of town.
I'm going to be out of town.
Okay. Next.
You can talk with all your other friends.
Vince is very excited to be coming. He cannot wait.
He is excited. I'm excited to see him.
Have you ever? He's written like annotations. For those about all the black helicopters that are in the background that you don't see right away.
No, they're there.
It's there. And Bohemian Grove is involved. All of it.
So basically, you still have time to read the Justice League International Volume 1. You can pick it up at InStock Trades right now for a phenomenal 47% off the cover price. It can be yours for a low, low price of $9.54. It's everything at InStockTrades.com.
Cool.
We have a new sponsor that I want to talk about a little bit later in the show. But for any
gun dealer,
it is not a gun dealer.
Jimmy's Guns,
but it is a dealer.
Art.
Yes, it is an art dealer. So if you are interested in procuring original art, we have a great new sponsor on the show, and we'll tell you a little bit about them later. But our last little order of business, music for this episode. Been holding off on this one. It's one of my favorite bands. I know that Tom will probably agree that it is a worthy band. Featured music for this episode is by The Flaming Lips.
Oh, yeah, I do like The Flaming Lips.
I knew.
She doesn't use jelly, I hear.
Christmas at the Zoo. All that good stuff.
They were big. They were big XRT band.
I love the Flaming Lips.
Back in the 90s.
I saw them at Lollapalooza, and all their stagehands were wearing superhero costumes like The Flash and Superman. And
I remember that story.
It's pretty sweet. I wasn't at Wizard World Chicago that
I know
that Sunday either because I was at a concert.
This is such a flyover convention for you.
For me, yeah.
He's not alone, unfortunately.
Well, I don't know the next time I'm going to Rosemont, and that frightens me. When am I going to be in Rosemont again? Who knows?
We'll go see a movie or something. You know, maybe that's a good place to start this week. As this episode comes out, this Thursday night through Sunday will be Wizard World Chicago. Mm-hmm. I believe it is the Chicago Comic Con now. And they officially renamed it, but it is formerly Wizard World Chicago, which was formerly the Great Chicago Comic Con. And the convention is going to be this weekend. I know that Sal and I will be there. As we said, Vince from 11 O'Clock Comics is going to come in for it. I think it's pretty easy to say that it is a down show this year. There's still some great talent coming. We're going to have fun, but it is not at the level that it has been the last few years.
And probably because it is so close to San Diego.
Yeah.
And I just interviewed Garib Sheamus about this subject, the promoter of the show.
Ooh. Did you ask him tough questions, John?
Yeah, no softballs.
I hope you didn't fucking puss out.
Oh, I totally pussed out. No, I did ask him about the proximity to San Diego, his plans to have the Anaheim convention the same weekend as
C2E2.
C2E2 in Chicago. And, I felt like George Stephanopoulos or Tim Russert on a Sunday morning, although alive as opposed to poor Tim Russert. Kind of dealing with a senator with spin.
The thing I'm most disappointed about not going to the Chicago Comic Con is it's my biggest shopping con.
Oh, it's still a great shopping con.
It's great. Yeah. I buy more back issues at that con than I do at any other one because it's easy for me to get them back home.
Because you don't have to weigh it in at the airport.
Yeah, I don't have to weigh it in at the airport. So that's like the place where I pick up most of my back issues. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, granted, I have boxes and boxes of stuff that I haven't read yet. So, I mean, I don't need more back issues.
You need more old books.
I need more Metal Men, old Metal Men issues.
There you go.
That's what I need.
In fairness, though, and I agree, Chris, it is a down year. But like you said, and we should name some names.
Howard Chaykin, Mark Miller.
George Perez.
Mike Allred.
Dan Slott. Mm-hmm. Brian Hitch. There are some very good big names.
Sure.
But you're right. Now, it's weird. DC and Marvel are not going to have official
booths
there.
It's a nice little regional convention.
Yes.
Now.
Well, and I would put it alongside most of the regional conventions. And again, the thing that we all have to remember, especially people listening right now and people that go on the net, I know of at least 10 people that are going to go to that con, buy a shitload of books, just like Tom was saying, and enjoy themselves without worrying about panels or signings or whatever. And we know the Chicago comics community is going to be out there. Our friends are all going to be out there. Seeley Norton, you name it. All those Chicago, Scotty Young's coming up and everything. Everybody's going to be there.
I think Tony Moore is going to be there. So, I mean, there are some
Clay Moore is coming.
Very good. No, I don't. Is
I
Clay
talked to
coming?
Him this week. I thought he said he was coming. Okay. Unless it changed recently.
I think he's coming to the other Chicago
No, convention. I think he's coming to both.
Which we have a nice Windy City announcement a little bit later.
But you're right. And actually, by the same token, the Windy City Con is comparable to, in a lot of ways, to Chicago Comic Con. And as you say, a lot of people are blowing off Chicago for Windy City, which is very nice.
A few people. It's a totally different creature, and I don't want the perception out there as we not bash Wizard, but talk about it, trying to be very objective about it.
Yeah.
There's no ulterior motive with us running Windy City Con because it's a completely different creature.
WindyCityComicCon.com.
Yes. Go now. $10.
No, but you're right, Chris.
There's nothing ulterior. It's a completely different creature.
No, and all you have to do is compare what happened at Wizard Chicago last year to what's going to happen this year. And these were some of my questions to Garib. I said, there are three less hours of panels each day. They don't start until 3 on Friday afternoon panels. And on Saturday and Sunday, they don't start until 2 are one. Mm-hmm. So that's kind
of Cup of Joe. No,
right.
No,
Joe's DC, not going to be there.
DC Nation's not going to be run by Didio.
Right. And Ian, now Ian Sadler has done that at a couple other shows as well. He was at WonderCon and it was a great thing. And so that's why I'm of two minds. On the one hand, I am disappointed that some of this programming that we've come to expect, another example, Gotham Knight, the Gotham Knight DVD premiered at last year's Chicago Con. Nothing like that is happening this year.
Is the Mike Norton dunk booth going to be operating this year?
Yeah, Mike, exactly. Dunk booth, are you ready?
Dunk booth? Marinara sauce?
He's shaking
his head. Thumbs up. But, you know, we're in a very odd in-between phase because I think a lot of publishers, a lot of creators see C2E2 as you know, the new game in town. It's going to be in the city of Chicago. And I think a lot of people are waiting for that show, expecting it to be in the first year a big event. And I think that a lot of people have their eyes kind of forward to that right now. So it's going to be interesting. And I've loved the Wizard Chicago show for a long time. It's as soon as like 4, maybe 5 years ago, it was still easily the second largest convention in the country.
It absolutely was.
Next to San Diego.
Yes.
And it has fallen off since then. But I see with what they're doing with their guest list, which is very media guest heavy, that they may be very consciously trying to turn into a pop culture convention and maybe even kind of like the Dragon Con of the North.
Well, and even more including media, also big wrestling, and I guess maybe that's part of media. Yeah. I don't know, it's there. I think you're right. I think it is more of a general pop culture show, even more so than Dragon Con, because even Dragon Con is still more fantasy-based, I think, than...
Fantasy. What,
if you well, will. And, yeah.
Fantasy.
Yes.
Yeah, but
your wildest fantasies, John.
But there is a comic book presence there, and I really kind of expect to see Wizard with C2E2 here in Chicago, that them trying to grab a hold of that. I think there is an opening in the market for a major fantasy, sci-fi, pop culture.
But I think we're going to see a lot of that at C2E2 as well. And what concerns me again about this year with the Chicago Comic Con is it's B and C list people from a celebrity standpoint. It's with the exception, there are some good exceptions.
The gal who was in Fast and the Furious.
You're calling Daniel Logan, who played young Boba Fett, a C-list celebrity, John?
I am. And Dan Lauria, who was Commissioner Dolan in the Spirit movie and the dad on the Wonder Years.
I love that they made a big deal of the gal who played Guido in Star Wars.
I'll be goddamned if any of you refer to Ernie Hudson as a B-list celebrity.
All right, everybody likes the fourth Ghostbuster.
Taylor Dane.
Benton Harbor native. Yeah. But getting married near
him. Billy D. Williams, man.
I love Lando. And I love Lando well before he was.
Gary Coleman and Todd Bridges.
I'm aware of that as well. And also, Edward James Olmos and James Hogan from Battlestar Galactica. And I think that's awesome.
My biggest regret is that I won't be able to walk up to
Olmos and get him to do
Hogan.
Captain Ty.
Oh.
Colonel Ty.
The old man's going to hear about this.
Oh, because come on, you know, I'm going to go, if I get the chance to interview him, I got to go up to Olmos with like a piece of paper and ask him to do the origami like in Blade Runner. Come on. Come on. Not you got to. And that's the thing. It's like all you have to do is look at last year's guest list and compare it to this year's, and there's definitely a drop off. I couldn't get Seamus to cop to that, obviously. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of spin in our interview, and I expected that.
Matt Wagner will be there.
That's another great name. And that's the thing. I mean, I've got a big laundry list of people I'm going to be bugging on the phone.
But 4 or 5 years ago, it was...
Last year, man.
It was...
Last year, everybody was there. Bendis was there. Johns was there. Fraction Rucka was there. Everybody... Rucka was there. I mean, No, everybody...
Was Fraction there last year? Maybe not. You're thinking 2 years ago.
Okay, maybe not.
Yeah, it was Johns and Greg were there last year.
And a lot of guys left early, unfortunately, because Mike Turner passed away.
Yeah, that was the thing about last year that was such a bummer, is that it was – I really felt like the show had bounced back after maybe a down year, and the Friday was such a good day. Friday night was such a good time, and then late Friday night, the people that were still hanging out at the bar at like midnight, 1 o'clock, then the news about Mike Turner came down, and it was really – a cloud over the entire convention for the rest of the week.
And a lot of creators did. They left and went back to LA to pay their respects. And it was too bad. No, and again, you're right. 2007 was a down year. And why? Because it was 9 days after San Diego.
Yep.
And that is just that fate when you have that date locked in. Mm-hmm. So no, I'll be very interested. The one thing I will say is because a lot of people were saying that it might be the end of Wizard. Don't tell Garib Sheamus that. He seems to have a lot of plans. He also says, too, that he will be announcing some different ideas at the New York, the Big Apple Con coming up in November. And that's fine.
The one that will be positioned exactly at the same time as the New York Comic Con next year.
Well, but that's next year. At least he doesn't have any competing. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. He is dead in the middle of San Diego 2 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks after Chicago is the Toronto show, which is going to have a lot of big creators.
I actually like that they're buying up some of the smaller shows. It'll be interesting. But, I like the way that the convention landscape is starting to lay out, and that you're going to have C2E2 is going to be the April show, which San Francisco, WonderCon in San Francisco is kind of traditionally the kickoff. That's usually late February or so?
Yeah, usually the last weekend of February.
But that is still a nice regional show, where I think we're going to have a major national show in April, and then you're going to have San Diego in the middle of summer in July, and then you're going to have New York Comic Con kind of at the tail end of the year in October. So I think you're going to have those three tent poles as major national conventions, in April and then July and then October, and then the regional cons kind of sprinkled in between, which I think is nice.
I agree. The only thing that worries me about the regional cons is sometimes it does dilute the few big shows that were around. And I mean, it's too bad. And I won't deny, I say that as somebody that's from Chicago and remembers when, the Windy City Con was, or the Chicago Con was the number one con.
I'll tell you what, speaking of conventions, we were coming off of San Diego Comic-Con, and one of the things I always enjoy talking about post-San Diego is obviously some of the announcements, but also the Eisners. So we have plenty of convention stuff to talk about. Anything that came out of San Diego, either Eisner winners or announcements that you guys are excited about?
John?
I'm certainly... I like Marvel's biggest news that they acquired the rights to Marvel Man, Miracle Man. I know that there are a lot of deals and decisions that have to be made as far as everyone's favorite chunk of Miracle Man history, the 80s stuff from Gaiman and Moore, and that those aren't finished. The good news is they've got the rights to the Golden Age stuff, which is nice from a history standpoint, and that they made the deal with the original creator, Mick Anglo. But I also think this is all poised for Neil Gaiman to continue where
maybe
he left
off.
I think it's going to be interesting because they do have rights to the Golden Age stuff. That are they going to reprint the Golden Age?
I'm sure there'll be some sort of collection. There has to
the
be.
The reaction to that, I think, is going to be interesting.
I agree.
Because
I think they'll do like Marvel Essentials of that. Would that?
No. I think it'll just be, I don't even know what they'll call it, but it's, you've read them, obviously, Tom.
Yeah.
And I have too.
I mean, they're
Golden Age comics.
They're
Golden Age sort of.
Yeah.
They're Captain Marvel.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they literally.
There's no hiding of it. They had to do it because they stopped printing Captain Marvel in Britain.
That's exactly right.
The weird thing about it is that. I'm going to be interested to see what people's reaction to it is, because a lot of people think solely of, if they know what Marvel Man is or Miracle Man is, they think of the Alan Moore
stuff. That's right. And maybe the Gaiman stuff.
If Marvel comes up, he never finished his, I would even say that the Alan Moore stuff is the stuff that if you bring it up, people will think of. If they reprint the older stuff, I'd be really interested to see people's reaction, because, I mean, it's Golden Age Captain Marvel stories just with the name change. No disrespect to Mick Anglo or any of those guys, but I mean they're silly throwaway eight-page stories.
Yeah, that were made more interesting by the new spin that more.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, because the aside from the Alan Moore sort of changing everything in it, I don't know if the interest would exist for it in quite the same way.
Oh, absolutely.
There would be no... it would just be a Captain Marvel copy.
Well, and also...
Well, there'll be interest, but it'll be more of a novelty interest.
Well, and I think you're right about the sexiness, if you will, of Miracle Man has been the fact that it is has been tied up in litigation and hasn't been released. Don't forget, though, that Gaiman did write enough stories to fill a trade and then had the issue of the Silver Age because he did the Golden Age.
That's true.
And also, now, what are your guys' opinions? Because no one is sure if Marvel Man will be part of the 616 universe proper. Or will it be spun off in a Marvel Knights book or a Max book?
I went cranky old man on 11 o'clock talking about this. That
I heard you.
My opinion is that they already did that with the Sentry, and I don't think it's been handled particularly well. So
it's got to be a Max title.
I agree.
Because otherwise, you can't do what they've done with the Sentry.
And I don't know where the legalities are in terms of – you're right. The actual stories themselves belong to whomever, and that's the kind of legal maze that they're all trying to go through. And from what I understand, they are talking to all parties involved. And that's including Todd McFarlane, I'm assuming, who owns the rights to the Image, owns the Image, the Eclipse, rather, negatives of those stories. But yeah, can Neil Gaiman pick up where he left off with that characterization?
Is this maybe a chance for Marvel to really establish the Icon line?
You know, I think there's a misconception still with Icon. Icon is not there for Marvel to make money on. The way Icon works is that's a specific perk for a creator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
it's for their exclusive creators to say, hey, here is your creator.
So I think it's a chance to establish the Max line at something.
Yeah, that's what I think, and I don't think they bought the rights to Marvel Man to hand to Gaiman. Beyond, they want Gaiman to write new Marvel Man stories, but I think it's in partnership and co-ownership. Icon is, we want you writing 616 books or whatever books, in the case of like David Mack doing Kabuki, is an Icon.
Bendis and Powers.
Well,
you know,
Bendis and Powers, but Mack and Kabuki and
Brubaker and Criminal.
Incognito. Here's an imprint for you to own your book outright and not have to worry about paying the Image fees that you would put it out yourself.
That's all the behind the scenes business end of it. I mean,
what Icon is, though.
Well, yeah, but just because it says Icon on the cover doesn't mean that has to be the business deal. If you want to bolster that line and give credence to it by maybe bringing Miracle Man,
but again, that's something that you're saying Icon needs that. I think Icon sits on a ledger as that kind of column of that's Icon stuff. And I could be wrong, but that's how it's always been explained to me.
When am I going to see Spider-Man meet Marvel Man?
Well, and I'm glad you said it, Tom, because that was kind of the point of my original question is. The more stories kind of elevated Miracle Man to this unstoppable godlike status that I think would be diminished.
It doesn't work.
Boy, this is really uber nerd talk, but why not? What the hell? We're in a comic shop.
We're in a comic shop on a Friday night.
The very stories that you bought the title to reprint, obviously, on some level, they obviously have some plans to attempt to reprint the Alan Moore stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Of course they do.
The stories would make no sense in context if you then have him fight, you know, be part of the Avengers. Then you're reprinting it would be a huge deal. And it's obviously something they very much want to do. But then on the other hand, you would have like, oh, and now he's part of it. It would be so weird to have those two separate things going on at the same time, both diminishing diminishing each other. And the reason you have this is you want to reprint the Alan Moore stuff. That they didn't buy it thinking like, oh, there's all these sweet 50s Captain Marvel stories that we reprint. They got it to get the Alan Moore stuff.
It's the first step in getting the Alan Moore stuff.
And you guys remember 1602 as well, and the announcement that came with that Gaiman was creating this Marvels and Miracles LLC that was this company to go and litigate to get the rights to Miracle Man and Marvel Man stuff back. So that he could continue this. And Marvel is a partner in that attempt by Gaiman. And you're right, Tom. I in my mind, I'm like, God, if you put Thor against Miracle Man Marvel Man or the Eternals, it is going to diminish one of those, either the Eternals or Marvel Man.
Because you want to reprint the old stuff, and it just won't make any sense.
And again, here's another thing, Chris. Not only do I want to see Neil Gaiman writing Marvel Man, I'd like to see Paul Jenkins write a Marvel Man story, and I hope that happens.
Didn't he already do that?
Well, no, and again, you know, there's a starting point to the Sentry that obviously was inspired by Miracle Man. Sure. I also think it did evolve into its own thing. And another thing, I had to think back to when McFarlane was trying to fold Miracle Man into the Spawn titles. Mm-hmm. And Mickey Moran.
A man of miracles.
Yes. And Mickey Moran, his civilian identity, made a couple appearances in Hellspawn, and it came real close. And
because McFarlane's, I mean, go read the Wikipedia entry on.
Absolutely.
It's
interesting.
It is a thick, old, tangled rat's nest of litigation and ownership, and it's it's crazy,
but I think incredibly interesting. And again, all the players. Mm-hmm. There's so many different what if scenarios.
Here's a question: do you see him as a Marvel character? Does he fit?
It doesn't matter.
Well, no. It's
was Conan a Marvel character before Conan came on to Marvel?
No, but he wasn't ever really in 616, was he?
Oh yeah.
What?
Oh yeah. There's what ifs and there's team ups and God, that wonderful Red Sonja, who's part of the Robert Howard kind of universe, Spider-Man crossover and stuff like that. Oh yeah.
Well, Tom, how about you? Do you see him as fitting into the Marvel landscape? I mean, a good writer can do anything with a character. There are no bad characters.
Well, I mean,
blah blah blah. Because
they just bought him. I mean, no more than I think of the Thunder Agents as DC characters. Maybe they'll figure out a way to do it where it is. But no, I mean, until I see them do something, I mean, I can't, in my head, I can't think of it that way because I've never seen it as a Marvel character. You know, it wasn't made that way. It had never been that way. It's like, it's just not. Until they do it, I can't think of it. It doesn't work.
Another weird thought that crossed my mind, it's almost like a kid with a toy box suddenly like slamming his Evel Knievel doll in a mix of his G.I. Joes. Evil's going to kick your ass now. You
that's kind of what it feels like.
It is, absolutely. And that's why keep them separate. Keep their universes separate. Mm-hmm. But by all means, tell the stories. And again, I'd point to Conan before the crossovers began and stuff. I mean, I think Marvel's going to do a hell of a job
an awesome Max title.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I hope that's the plan.
Yeah, because Max has changed a lot over the last couple of years.
In an interesting way, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Marvel Man Noir?
Tom has the subtle humor going tonight.
Yeah, the Marvel Man Noir.
I'm all for it.
Eisner's? This year, you guys take a look at the Eisner.
I don't even know who won.
I was happy for the handful of our friends that won.
Mm-hmm.
So way to go, Rance Hosley for Comic Book Tattoo.
Yep.
Way to go, Matt Fraction and Salvador LaRocca for Iron Man.
That was interesting.
Good cross promotion for 11 o'clock comics. And I mean that sincerely because it was a good conversation.
Are we just going to do all the same stuff we talked about on 11 o'clock 11 comics 2 days ago?
Go back to 11 o'clock.
I just explain to you why I don't like this in many ways.
Is this like a mood? This a commentary track for 11 o'clock comics?
No.
And another thing, Vince, here's where you're wrong again. No, go ahead and explain what you didn't like about the nomination.
Well, No. Iron Man is good.
Explain why you hate Mac Fraction and Salvador.
Yeah, why do you hate that?
Because
the
I'll call Matt in two goddamn seconds.
I enjoy that book. It's one of the few Marvel books that I pick up on a regular basis anymore, and it is entertaining. I think that Fraction's done a nice job. I don't know, like I said, on 11 o'clock, I don't know if it's any better or any worse.
What was it up against?
Yeah, I wanted to know that too. I didn't see what the other nominees were.
It was best new ongoing.
Yeah.
Is that the?
Yeah.
What was it up against?
Yeah, but do you remember? You don't remember the? The
no,
you don't
no.
know what the rest of them are. The rest of them must have made a huge impression on you.
It's a good series. I just don't know if I go, ooh, Eisner winner.
Well, I'll tell you, it got me buying Iron Man on a regular basis again, which is something I hadn't done in a while, and I do love the character. And also, coming off the movie, I couldn't help but appreciate how much it matched the characterization.
Yeah,
the characterization that succeeded on screen. And I would also say that it's a good jumping on book for people who came out and said, wow, they still print Iron Man? I'd like to read Iron Man. That, I think, is an excellent series to do that. Mm-hmm. And also, I think Matt has done a good job navigating the book through Secret
various
Invasion
events,
and the current status quo of Dark Reign. I think, I really like the way Matt writes Iron Man, and I think it's been a long time since a regular. I mean, I liked what the Knopfs did.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay, but it just kind of seemed like Iron Man in the wilderness. There's just more of a purpose to the book now. And
it was
kind of
pushed
been
off to the side.
Yeah.
And I was like,
there was I think it was Joe Casey and Fraser Irving did a really nice stretch on Iron Man.
Well, weren't they miniseries?
It may have been a miniseries.
I think it was.
It was right around. I think it was during when Ellis was doing all the Extremis stuff, which I think was plagued by lateness.
Yeah, Adi Granoff obviously fell off schedule, and that I think really hurt the book.
But the Casey and which I would never pick Fraser Irving as an Iron Man artist, but it worked incredibly well.
That was it kind of had the Rocketeer kind of look to it, didn't it?
Yeah. And it was like this whole the Lightning, who's the Living Laser, was a kind of a character in that. Really, really cool story.
I think Casey specifically as a writer pops in with a lot of out of continuity Marvel series and has been doing that really since the early 2000s. Those Earth's Mightiest Heroes Avenger miniseries when mm-hmm. Bendis was busy kind of changing the status quo. I think those were great books. And yeah, I think Joe as a writer always has a good handle on that stuff, and he's always a good go-to Marvel writer when he's writing for Marvel.
Very cool. One Eisner win. Yeah. Nate Powell won for best graphic novel for Swallow Me Whole, which is put out by Top Shelf, which is a nice little transition for me because a couple days after that, found out actually Jeffrey Brown introduced us over email, and Nate Powell's going to be at the Windy City Comic Con.
Very nice.
So we have an Eisner Award winner to add.
There's a great alt division of the Windy City Comic Con that I think is really commendable, and I think that's really great. And I think as much as we all enjoy superhero books, we do like our alt books as
John,
well.
John, I only read superhero.
I know.
I don't want to,
but it is. It's very cool that we've got that corner covered, and that because especially the Chicago mm-hmm. community and so many people that we have here that are of that community. So I think that's really neat.
I want to hear some guy's sad story about his life.
The fuck does that have to do with Bizarro? Let's go.
I want to see
Jesus.
Parallel worlds and cyborgs.
And quickly, too, mm-hmm. A quick nod to Art and Franco for Tiny Titans, which is
good for them.
That's honestly, there's a guy that honestly, and both of them really have put so much sweat and years in comics and tears.
They're going to make you sweat.
And I'm really happy that
sweat. Sweat.
That art especially has really found this great niche and love from the community and stuff. And everybody I know loves Tiny Titans.
I hope Art draws Tiny Titans till he's 100.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I
hope he draws it till he's 120.
What do you think of that?
Well, you just love him that much
what
more, don't you?
What a dick move, Chris, to limit his lifespan to 100 years.
Hey, sir. What are you doing?
Looking ahead at next year's Eisners, I think this is a book that's getting some major hype. I just picked it up today. It came in from Amazon. But David Mazzucchelli's Asterius Polyp. Yes, I read it in the car on the way here.
Yeah, I read it in the car.
What if it
between
sucks?
Between lights.
It sucks, and everyone is the first person that read it said it was really good, and then everyone else.
I'm a little worried because this thing is so hyped up, and I'm gonna sit down and read it this week, and I'm a little afraid of
fucking
it. Not
dust jacket doesn't even fit the book. what an amateur move.
Cheap. Isn't it interesting that speaking of the covers and stuff? Mm-hmm. Because then I want to throw
things
Darwin,
like the Megan Fox. Covers.
I want to throw Darwin Cook's The Hunter in there as well when I talk about this. How. A bunch of these original graphic novels are looking like novels more and more.
Oh yeah, yeah. The book jacket design.
I think it's incredibly smart.
Has anybody in the Peanut Gallery read Asterius Polyp, the Mazzucchelli?
Oh, fuck no.
That's it. Shame them. Shame them.
They're all looking at their Blackest Night comics.
This isn't your fucking art podcast, exactly. All right? This is fucking working man show.
I don't know if
this is a hard hat show.
Yeah, this is a fucking hard hat show.
Since recording 11 o'clock, have you had a chance to get The Hunter yet?
No, I haven't. Is it here?
I don't know.
I haven't seen it.
I don't
know
if Mark has it.
Mark!
I know I got my copy.
Do you have The Hunter?
Darwin Cook?
It Jesus. Does,
I had to reserve my copy.
It's Darwin
didn't surprise.
Cook, man.
Didn't see. It's it's
the shop owner just told Chris to fuck off if you couldn't hear it.
It's gorgeous. It's incredible. And as a Westlake and Richard Stark fan, I got to say, it's very faithful to the book. And it works. And
listen, the only version I like is the movie Payback.
I love that movie.
Did you ever read and come across, because I know you're a Silver Age fan, Gil Kane's His Name is Savage?
No, I've not. I've heard of it. I've never read it.
Very inspired by the Parker character as well. And I couldn't help but think of that. Dialogue by Archie Goodwin, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Ooh. Fancy.
I'm telling you, seriously, we've got to do IT comics sometime. Just have another little crumpet. And did you read this latest?
Did you read Asterios Polyp? Everyone's read it.
Ooh.
Everyone who knows anything about books has read it.
That's it. I'm never bringing
did you
up
enjoy another it?
Book
if you
on
didn't,
fucking show ever again.
You're a savage.
No, hey, man.
Were you going to review a book you haven't read yet, though? What were you?
No.
I was just pointing it out.
I was just pointing it out maybe as something, you know, looking forward to the Eisner's last year. It's a book that's getting a lot of buzz.
I haven't read it yet.
I haven't read it. I'm telling people I'm getting ready to read it.
I read Mazzucchelli's City of Glass adaptation from, now it's about 15 years ago, I have to admit, but his alt stuff is very interesting, and it's interesting to compare. You can't help it to Batman Year One and his years on Daredevil,
sure,
and his mainstream work. It's cool, and he's a hell of a writer. I wish he wasn't the J.D. Salinger of comics, and refuses to be interviewed, I guess, but is very giving to the industry as a teacher, and I think that's really neat that he's at the School of Visual Arts doing his thing. So
yeah,
you know.
All right. Well, let's stop it with the Eisner talk. You can go online, check out all of the winners, and make your own snap
all
judgments.
All the losers.
On that and all the losers. But I tell you what, one thing I want to do, we need to clear out the email box and the voicemail box. We're going to hit some voicemails here and probably come back with some emails maybe a little bit later. If you would like to call the show, you certainly can by dialing 1-888-977-5903, just like one of our buddies from Canada.
Hey, Around Comics. This is Kyle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. You guys probably remember me as Sunnyvale Trash, not in the forums or the new community, but still listen to the show and still love it. Anyways, I was just curious if you guys noticed that it looks like DC is getting Hitman, Garth Ennis's and John McCrae's Hitman on the shelves. The first trade recently got reprinted, and I've heard people talk about how good this series is, and being a bit of an Ennis fan, I picked it up. It was pretty good. It was a little more on the goofy side of Ennis' stuff, which I, you know, don't mind. Still pretty good. So I was wondering if you guys could tell me what it was in for throughout the rest of the series, if they do end up reprinting all of it, if you guys liked it, and just some general thoughts. Have a good one, guys. Take it easy.
I really like Hitman.
Me too.
And it might start off goofy, but it doesn't stick goofy the whole... To me, it is... like a good mix of all the stuff that Ennis does really well. It doesn't delve too much into like the juvenile, like boys humor,
okay,
you know, of the boys. Mm-hmm. It has a nice balance with a certain sentimentality to it. There's also DC superheroes show up in it from time to time, and Ennis, you know, writes them well, and you know, in reaction to this character, and I think it's a really well balanced, well done book.
I have not read it.
I agree with you, and I think it is the close. Ever since the wall has been kind of constructed that separates Vertigo from the DCU, it's the closest thing we get to a Vertigo style book with superheroes walking through it. And again, Garth Ennis, like, and in previous episodes, I've kind of put James Robinson, Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, all these British creators. I always think it's interesting, Alan Moore certainly, to put the American heroes in these British hands. And I always think you get much more interesting characterization of the heroes.
He has a surprisingly reverential touch to a lot of the characters, like where it would be easy to make Superman look like a doofus, but he doesn't really do that. There was that great Hitman JLA two issue series that came out
it was 2007, like, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like the last 2 years, which was it's really good in that you see this character you would never think interact with the character. Morrison even had Hitman show up in his JLA where they're auditioning people for the Justice League, and he shows up in it.
Nice.
Because he doesn't fit. He's a killer. And to see him interact with the superheroes, but it's not just a joke on the superheroes when they show up. It's a very well-balanced, well-written.
Yeah, it's like if this hard, you know, kind of hitman, kind of boozy dude, you know, just happened to side up with like the DC universe. And it's just very interesting to see it from that perspective and see the DCU from Tommy's perspective and also Ennis's perspective.
You know, I haven't thought about Hitman in a while, but I think it might be one of my more favorite Ennis things, because it's the most balanced. It isn't.
I'm stunned that it took as long as it did for them to put it out in books. I'm glad that they're doing it, and I know Bob Wayne confirmed that at one of the DC panels at San Diego. So
you know, it's very cool. Speaking of Ennis, And we were talking about Iron Man earlier. Whenever I saw Iron Man, loved the movie, mm-hmm. and then I read Ellis's Extremis, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh man, did they mine this for the movie?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're literally like pieces of dialogue and scenes that were reconstituted for the movie.
Absolutely.
I just and going back to Ennis, I just read Hellblazer: The Dangerous Habits, which was part of Garth Ennis's run on Hellblazer.
And this was part of the movie.
Actually suggested to me by Jeff Lemire,
who
fancies himself as one of the preeminent Constantine experts on the planet.
I didn't know that.
Jeff is a huge Hellblazer fan.
We discussed the Legion when we talked.
I have a feeling if you bring up Constantine, he'll talk your arm off because he's a huge fan of the series. And he suggested Ennis's Dangerous Habits and also Jamie Delano stuff and Azzarello.
Jamie Delano was excellent and really was the original Hellblazer writer when it started off,
exactly.
when the series started and everything. So, yeah, he's great. You know, everything Ennis does is great. And, you know, more of our podcasting friends, the iFanboy boys, mm-hmm. I know Connor Kirkpatrick and on iFanboy was talking about how great
his favorite writer. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, he's ready to put him right next to Alan Moore and Grant Morrison and those guys. And you know something, I can appreciate that from the diversity of books that Ennis writes. And again, I like The Boys, and I know some people don't like The Boys, but everything I think Ennis touches, he's a very interesting writer. He can do pretty much every genre, handles comedy, horror, violence, superheroes, everything, war stories.
Tom and I have talked about his panache for war stories.
Yeah. I don't want to kidnap him and force him to write battlefields solely all the time.
You know, I loved DC's war stories that he was doing back in the early 2000s, and it was a wonderful book that unfortunately was kind of oddly priced at the time, and it was kind of an expensive 48-page quarterly, mm-hmm. and would come out, you know, semi-regularly, but it was always incredibly entertaining.
Night Witches was probably one of my you know top five or five or so stories that came out last year. It was really
Avatar stuff is great.
Yeah, yeah, and this is awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get through a couple more voicemails here.
Hey guys, my name's Luke, calling all the way from Australia. Now I'm usually Parker around various forums. Just gonna say on the topic of Jason Aaron, I've got probably my favorite non-scalp series that he's written. That's Wolverine Weapon X, which is structuring just like Ennis did with Max Punisher, just one of a lot of the bloody content that was in it. And also, guys, I'm very much a Marvel guy, but after hearing your episode and rundown on Blackest Night, I bought issue one. Now, as someone who's not read the series of Green Lantern or followed the DCU very closely, except maybe the Bat Universe, I found it pretty easily accessible, like other Jeff Johns books I've read at the time. And I have to say, guys, thank you very much. Awesome book.
I have to say,
Brian, ever since Jerome Pena left Punisher, Tang and what? Just can't hold a candle. And the book has suffered as a result. I think the story's a bit slower, concentrating too much on the villains instead of Punisher kicking ass. But anyway, all right. Thank you guys. Love the show. Oh, yes. Don't worry about Punisher in the mutton you. Stick to Max Punisher. That's where it's at, baby. All right. Bye.
He is a Max fan. So thank you, Luke from Australia.
I did drop Ghost Rider when Hewitt took over for
Dan Way.
Bashi.
Oh, okay.
He was there. When
Jason was writing.
I do like Hewitt on the Punisher book. I think it fits in better than the Ghost Rider one did. I think he does a good version of all the very menacing, weird villains of that Punisher book, which is absolutely fantastic. The Remender Punisher.
I completely agree.
Really, really, really good.
I mean, just like, you know, Matt did a great job when he debuted on it and handed it off to Rick, and Rick hasn't stopped, and the book continues, and you know, now Rick is getting more Marvel jobs, and I'm very happy about that. I think it's an excellent book, and yeah, the art doesn't bother. They are never bothered.
What's going to be funny, I think, in the next year or so, is that as people start to discover Rick's work for the first time, and then they think of him as like this, you know, new on the scene writer.
Yeah,
it's been around for 10 years.
I was gonna say it's been going on since '99 when they said this new guy Brian Bendis had been in the business for, you know, 10 years.
I can definitely see how Huat's work can might throw you off after you've, you know, it's a little different style. It's a little different. A little. I had the same reaction when it happened on Ghost Rider. It didn't bother me on Punisher.
And on Blackest Night, I just want to say, because I haven't had a chance to say it here, outside of Walking Dead, I've been zombied out since 28 Days Later, the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't dislike zombies, but my whole thought is, what is interesting about a staggering dead kind of guy? And I like Max Brooks's World War Z. I thought that was wonderful. Looking forward to his comic book work. But I just, like, Marvel Zombies, frankly, and sorry, Kirkman and Arthur and et al. I and Sean Phillips. I just wasn't interested.
Kurt Van Winnie.
Yes, but I got to say, Blackest Night, they're zombies with a purpose. They're intelligent. They hurt you with their words as much as they do with their actions.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it a fun and exciting adventure. And I think the cruelty.
You can get to write all these dead people saying really mean things to
honestly the cruel
living people. Yeah,
yeah, the cruelty of Ralph Dibny and
I Smell a Mystery,
and Martian Manhunter.
And yes, oh my God, I love it. I think it's great. And I was not ready for
Aquaman is going to say you are the one who is lame?
Oh, I would like love on that T-shirt. I would love that.
Well, and I'm looking forward to hearing terrible things come out of my favorite hero, the Golden Age Superman.
Yeah, Golden Age Superman.
Love that
some
guy.
Shit to Superman.
Exactly,
say some
man.
Horrible things.
That's right. Crypto is going to bite his ankle like there's no tomorrow.
All right. Well, here is another one from another.
It's like Jeff Johns. I'm sure in some level, some weird therapy that he's writing people saying mean things to other guys.
I'm thinking about these weird stuff that I could have these guys do.
Staying up late.
All over the Green Lantern Blackest Night DVD, or not Blackest Night.
First Flight.
Man, have you seen it?
Really good. Yeah, yeah.
And the bonus stuff.
I thought the bonus stuff was better.
I did too, and I want to say
the movie was okay.
Quick tangent, because everyone complains, why come they don't put commercials for comics on their movies and TV?
There you go.
First Flight, man. There is an unashamed 8-minute promo about specifically Blackest Night. It's better than a commercial. Johns is all over all those bonus features and is fantastic.
New Frontier had sweet backup features too.
Absolutely.
They just talked about like villains and
even to be honest, the Superman Doomsday thing, the best thing about it was rehashing the comic book story versus the not so good movie that they did.
I thought like the Green Lantern movie.
Really?
Really?
Interesting.
I liked it. I thought it was good.
Talk to me.
It was okay.
Talk to Uncle John, Tom. What's the matter?
It was just okay.
This is how I
liked
I saw,
the Wonder Woman one better, actually.
Really? I thought that was very 300-esque, pardon my spit. As I spit at you.
It had a little bit more, like, I don't know, like the Wonder Woman one had a little bit better, like a nice angle on it. And
I thought it was interesting.
It had an interesting flavor to it. And the Green Lantern one, I just didn't think Hal Jordan was that interesting in it. And I was kind of like, it's like almost more Sinestro's.
With the Wonder Woman and the First Flight, I really hope that these are the first installments of maybe a series of them.
I mean,
I would love
terrible.
To see the continuing adventures. Because as they leave it at the end, spoilers, is that Hal is going back to Earth. So now we're set up to maybe have some good, you know, Hal on Earth Green Lantern stories. And so
when are we going to get a Flash one?
I think it's going to, I would count on it. I think I would count on it whenever they get their shit together on the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and I think Victor Garber in a lot of ways, I think steals that cartoon as Sinestro.
Sinestro's awesome.
He was incredible.
I think that might be part of my problem is that it almost becomes like, I'm like,
I think that's
why don't we just make it just Sinestro?
And spoilers, kids, but can I be a fanboy and say, isn't that kind of like the dirty telltale secret that Jeff keeps seemingly dropping about Blackest Night and the prophecy that Sinestro was and is the greatest Green Lantern of all?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Sinestro is going to help Hal Jordan stop whatever is going to come.
I think he's building up a certain amount of
he's like Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, redemption. No, I think you're that's 100%
right.
That
could be interesting. Oh, and speaking of that, I guess we can start geeking out on it a little bit more.
Yes, tell us more.
Yes. Whenever we were talking Blackest Night, I really think that the Guardians are going to be no more after this series.
Ooh.
They've done that before.
Our little blue bald friends are going to go away.
I think the Guardians are going away, but did you read Legion of Three Worlds number 5?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear, it was kind of very subtly, who the last Guardian was?
Sodom yet?
Yeah.
Hello, Sodom. Want to sit down for a while and hear about the days when we had rings all over the world?
There's rings all
it's
over
true.
The place.
I was the last Green Lantern, and now I'm not alone.
So I think
that's the theme song, too. to the coda of Legion of Three Worlds.
So I think that at the conclusion of Blackest Night, we may see Sodom Yat come back from after as a very messianic figure from sacrificing himself to turn the sun yellow around Daxam, and maybe come back and as the bearer of the Ion Force, the Guardians get wiped out, and Sodom Yat becomes the Guardian.
The embodiment of the green force. Jeff has been spinning an incredible story since Rebirth started, and it seems to touch a lot of his other books as well.
Next voicemail. Let's roll.
All right.
Come on. Enough
all right. So we've gone to Canada and Australia. Now this one is from the Burbank. Country of the Bronx.
Oh, that is a foreign country.
Heard of them?
Psychogenesis from the Bronx. Just want to say you guys have a great show. Keep up the good work. Question is regarding the X titles and why you guys don't pick them up anymore. I just want to know what happened. For me, I stopped reading for a long time because I got tired of them going out in space. It just didn't seem interesting to me anymore. And they came back with Messiah Complex and have been with the titles ever with the Uncanny X-Men ever since. I think you guys are missing out. I have a suggestion for music. Chicago native Common. Very good MC.
You
guys put on the Wu-Tang before, and I thought that was really funny and it was really cool.
It's not a white old country band.
I hadn't heard Wu-Tang for a while, and that's like a classic hip-hop classic album right there.
Did you do an old country album? Because then Chris might play it.
That would be awesome. Look through his library. He's got some pretty good stuff. Not the whole shoot 'em up, bling-bling rap, but, you know, good stuff. It would be awesome if he played the corners
women like
for the next episode of Around
Common.
Thank you very much, guys. And
he takes his
keep up the good work, man. I love the show.
Let me tell you what. The ladies love it.
All right, thank you.
I've seen it happen.
So some Common, huh?
Yeah.
It's,
I like Common.
Would he do like a mashup with like...
I like Boston Common.
It's not going to do any fucking like Merle Haggard covers.
Yeah, a Common Merle Haggard
why
mashup.
Why do I not read the X-Tiles? The last time I read...
We'll play some Common at some point.
Yeah, the last time I read the X-Men really seriously is when Morrison wrote it. And then when that was over, I felt absolutely no need.
Mm-hmm.
To me, and this will seem odd, I thought it was kind of a nice end to me reading the X-Men. I was kind of like, okay.
Yeah,
I can
stop now.
Sorry, I read Astonishing for a while.
I liked
Astonishing. We'll talk about it in the next issue, but I just wasn't terribly attracted to a lot of the characters. There's too many books.
I think it didn't
strike a chord with me the same way other
you
stuff
maybe
did.
Like I the last X-Men title I read and still like to read is First Class.
That was a very accessible book, and as someone who normally doesn't like the X-Men, I loved X-Men First Class. I hear that I'm missing a lot of good stuff from Mike Carey on his X books. Mm-hmm. I hear that I'm missing a lot of good stuff from Peter David on X Factor.
I picked up X Factor for a while and then I dropped it. I keep picking up and it's okay, I guess. I just don't, it doesn't strike me the same way as it did. When I was a kid, I loved New Mutants. New Mutants was like,
oh yeah.
It was Flash and New Mutants were like the two things I loved. And
does Claremont's X-Men fantasy that's going on now, is that interesting in any way?
That I have exactly zero interest in reading that. Yeah,
okay.
But I'm not Ron.
Well, and I understand that too.
I'm a masochist.
Ron Richards, all right.
A masochist. I don't know. I look at it and I say, I don't care what happens to any of them.
Yeah, well, and for me, it was always, and I always say this, in the 70s, there were two doors. Yeah. There was the X-Men door and there was the Legion door. And I went through the Legion door because I could only handle one group of 50 characters as opposed to men.
And I think the same, that's why Legion has to be rebooted all the time. It's not because it's convoluted continuity. It's because it's a lot of characters.
No, it's the convoluted continuity. Well, it's really
complicated.
It is, man, because that's the core of what the Legion was, and that's why Jeff was able to get editorial to agree and say, look, Superman has to be a part of this story. Yeah. It has to be.
Yeah.
But to not
digress off the X-Men. Oops.
Jesus.
That's professional. X-Men for me became so incredibly complicated.
Absolutely, man.
And it's just boil it down to what it – that's why I like X-Men
First Class.
That's
why Astonishing worked well because and I want to – when we talk about some comics, I just finished the second copy, the second volume of Astonishing.
Let's do it. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, let's do it now.
We'll talk about a bunch of stuff next week.
I was in Pittsburgh helping my fiance move into her sublet for 2 weeks.
Good pierogies there, I hear.
I have not had the pierogies yet. I have had a delicious sandwich from Pimenti Brothers.
I heard about that place. I saw that on the Food Channel.
They're good.
It's crazy, those damn sandwiches.
Good. I read Astonishing X-Men. I was picking this up in singles at the time this story came out, and I dropped it. And then I read the hardcover.
The thing about when that was coming out in singles, you could drop it and then decide to pick it up and never miss an issue.
Never miss an issue, yeah.
Was this the Danger Room story?
That was the first hardcover.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, go ahead.
This is the second one. I actually liked this better than the first hardcover, which is
the more cosmic one.
Yeah. Is this Colossus's Return? Or?
Yeah, this
Colossus's Return is in the first one as well.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, but the second story is more about Colossus being tied up into this interstellar prophecy.
And
the world breaker or whatever it was.
Break world. And I was very there's a lot of really, really good things in this, like – Whedon makes an actually very complex story where he tricks you at times and then reveals the trick to you later, and things confuse you, but it's supposed to confuse you, and then you realize that it's not just bad writing. You're like, oh, why are they doing this? I thought Cyclops told them to do something else, and it's revealed that Cyclops is tricking someone, and then you also got tricked at the time that it happened, and then it reveals it, and all the characters are at times written extremely well. Like Cyclops is actually interesting. Yeah. I love Cyclops.
I'm a big Cyclops fan.
I love Cyclops,
as well.
And Whedon writes a really good, really good Cyclops and Wolverine.
Puts a little Han Solo in it.
Yeah, like Whedon figured out that Han Solo's awesome, so decided to jam him into everything. there's a lot of Han Solo in everyone.
Kitty Pride has a lot of Han Solo.
Yeah, everyone has a little bit of Han Solo in this story. But it's a great big outer in opposition to the guy who, not that I'm opposing him, like some sort of antagonistic relationship. But I like it when the X-Men like leave Earth and stuff and do stuff that's not just like, oh, what was
they
us?
All hate us. Yeah.
Yeah. Occasionally it's interesting to see them in an environment where it's a little different. And
I always kind of like it because it takes that the persecuted minority aspect out of it. That's what I was like about the Byrne Claremont stuff. Whenever they would take them off world for the Brood storyline and all the Shi'ar stuff, it was like they weren't mutants anymore. They were
just
out there, they were just superheroes, kind of on a more even playing field. And it was the X-Men in space.
There's
and
a ton of twists and turns in it, which I love. The art is really good at times. My only criticism is that Whedon has a tendency to get the Gardner Foxes, where he has a joke that's really good and he just has someone say it regardless of whether it fits the character that's in there. It's like a joke where Cyclops is like, oh, there's like this young mutant gets brought along with him and they're like, oh, she's part of the team. And he's like, did they teach you that? Yeah. Did you teach her the handshake? And I'm just like, why would he say that? He would not, like, this whole issue, he wouldn't say something like that. Or Wolverine makes a joke about demoting her to ex-succular, and I'm just like,
Wolverine would not say that.
I wouldn't say that. I was just like, and all these jokes have the same voice. They're all like the same type of joke.
Well, you watch Buffy.
Yeah, Buffy. Yeah, it's the same thing. And Serenity and Firefly. He can't get out of his own way sometimes with his own jokes. Mm-hmm. Like he sees something funny and then has someone say it, and he would be better served by cutting that out, I think, a little bit, because it doesn't need it at times, and it really takes you out of the story. Like, there's times where I'm just like, what the why would that person say, you know, like, it's so laborious to get to that point.
Yeah, it's clever, but it's not well-timed and not well-placed.
Like, I thought of a really good joke. I need someone to say it. And so I just have someone say it, and it doesn't fit. Because the rest of the time, outside of those jokes, the characters are all very distinct and all have their very unique voices. And then just occasionally, they'll say something that all has the same tone. And it just different people say it, like
it's
an old Gardner Fox comic.
Yeah, the characters disappear.
The kid, there's no kid. It's just a way to get something across.
It's Joss Whedon saying it.
There's a little bit of that too. There's a little. It's always like a cutesy play on words joke that doesn't quite fit whatever the character is. It's a little. I mean, I still love the book, but it's the one thing that always kills me about the stuff he does. There's the cutesiness he can't get out of the way of. His own jokes that he wants to make.
Well, I think the other half of Astonishing X-Men, just like Morrison on his run with the fantastic Frank Quietly artwork.
The Cassidy is art. Oh, my God. Awesome.
The Cassidy art is pretty.
See, that's the thing,
awesome.
Too, with the jokes is sometimes you should just relax and let Cassidy don't have to fit a joke into everything that's going on or make it, like, sitcom-y. It reminded me a little bit of, like, a less successful version of Justice League International, actually. And I think the difference is, and it's not a Whedon thing, like Whedon couldn't do the same thing that Justice League International did. I think there's probably more pressure because people have more expectations of what the X characters are like than Maguire and DeMatteis and Giffen had when they did. A lot of those characters were sort of blank modern slates, and you could do what you wanted. And they were able to mold the characters around making jokes that fit their characters in a certain way, and it had
there was no pre-established voice.
Pre-established voice, so it's a little tougher for him to do the same thing. But I see a lot of parallels between the two because it's a big action story, but there's a sitcom-y, jokey factor to it that works a lot of the time. But Whedon falls short a little bit because the unique voices get lost. It's not as when you read JLI, like in Blue Beetle makes a certain type of joke, and Captain Marvel makes a certain type of joke, and Batman will say certain things. And if you separate them out, if you don't have the picture, you can still tell who's making
that's
that
a
joke.
Captain Marvel joke.
And Astonishing X-Men, you take, like, I'm going to demote you to ex-succular. Tell me who says that.
I guess Kitty and not Wolverine.
No, you'd be wrong. Did he teach you the secret handshake? Tell me which character would make that weird random joke out of any of the out of the issues. But I mean, that's overly harsh because it was really good, and the story is awesome. It's a great. It would be absolute perfection if you could just cut that one little thing out. It bothered me. The entire time I was reading.
The one thing that bothered me about the title is that they continued to print it after Whedon left the book, because no offense to Warren Ellis. And who draws for Warren Ellis?
Simone Bianchi.
And obviously, these are two A-list creators. Mm-hmm. The thing that made Astonishing X-Men the event it was that Whedon, coming outside of comics, was coming in. No offense to Warren Ellis. I know he's a wonderful, great writer. He is of comics. And I think Astonishing should have been a title that is held for very special events. If Neil Adams wants to come back and draw an arc of X-Men, you put out Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah.
Nothing against Simone Bianchi, who's a beautiful artist and incredible. And also Warren is a great writer. But they are of comics. It is nothing uncommon and astonishing having these guys on the title.
I read this.
Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison is All-Star Superman. Remember, Batman Year One was Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli at their best. Year two and year three, McFarlane is in there. I know Mike Barr is in there. Very nice guys, but I'm sorry.
It
diminishes the event.
I liked it so much. I read it like I was reading it in the airport. Reading it on the plane while I was sitting on the fucking tarmac for 45 minutes.
Yeah, but you don't have a slipcover on
it.
So it's very nondescript. Oh, okay.
I took it off because I don't want any.
What's that you're reading there, young fanboy?
But it is extremely good.
It's extremely good.
It's extremely good. It's very clever. The story is fast paced.
Cool.
There's no overwrought. There's we're so stigmatized by society, and it gets through all that and has the characters interact in an interesting way. All the drama just comes from the characters interacting with each other, like Cyclops and Kitty and Emma and Cyclops and Wolverine is just very funny most of the time. Very Wolverine fun. I mean, the best scene is like at one point all their minds are manipulated and Wolverine thinks he's like an 8-year-old fancy lad English boy.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and he's running around and the way he remembers who he is that a beer like hits him in the head and he picks up the beer and remembers.
I remembers
who he is. And that's an example of like the really funny stuff that really works because it totally fits that character and it's such a unique thing to that character.
Yeah, that was very
yeah, which were and good. There's tons of stuff like that, like the Beast remembers who he is because he made a special ball of yarn with like pheromones that would have like mathematical equations in it because he knows if he was devolved, he'd want to like play with a ball of yarn and it would make him remember who he was. So there's very funny parts
That's
like
cool.
that are very unique and obviously very tailored to the individual characters.
I kind of purposely stopped buying the singles to eventually read them when they come out collected and everything.
You should. It's awesome.
Yeah,
the
so hardcover, that's
the
hardcovers
are great.
Yeah, you know, I'm a cheap bastard, so I'll probably wait till there's soft covers.
It's
but
a,
I still
it's
want
a,
to see.
It's fast paced.
Cool.
And it's awesome.
No, that's great.
Cutting right through.
Well, hey, I'd mentioned that we have a new sponsor at the top of the show, and I have a prepared spot here, but I'm gonna skip over that and really just kind of
we're gonna wing it.
This is the first and final week
that there's sponsors.
Exactly. If this were a telethon, this is where he'd be like taking off the tie. He'd be like, seriously, folks, as a comedian, in all seriousness, this is an important
Have you had
cause.
These fat feet popsicles?
I'm here to tell you, this isn't a commercial. This is me telling you, Chris Neisman.
No, you know our sponsors here, like In Stock Trades and Netflix, are both products that we use, and we don't take on advertisers that sell products. We drop the nuclear waste sponsorship.
The Flood Brothers won't be doing their waste management.
We actually use the people that we take on as advertisers, and so we believe in the product. And I want to tell you a little
That's
bit
why
about
we are huge fans of Vienna hot dogs.
I was going to say of Red Dye Number 5. Sure, it causes cancer, but we love it. All right, go ahead.
Go ahead, Chris.
Sorry.
Cadence Comic Art is an original art dealer. Yeah. And if you've ever thought about buying original art but you didn't know where to start, cadencecomicart.com is a great place, and you'll know a lot of the creators because it's a lot of the folks that we've had on the show in the past. You can go to cadencecomicart.com, which is www.cadencecomicart.com. It's just cadencecomicart.com. And they've got folks that you'll be really familiar with, like Scotty Young, Mike Norton, Tim Seeley, Chris Burnham, Jamal Igel, Jeremy Hahn, Ryan Stegman, Sean Murphy, Brent Schoonover, Mike Gatos, and they just added David Lloyd. And they've got a ton more artists there. Jenny Frizen is rep through that. And they're basically an art rep.
Ooh! Yes, we love their art. David Lloyd delighted me with his wonderful rendition of the Guy Fawkes mask in V for Vendetta.
Did he really? Mm-hmm.
David Lloyd.
So anyway, I know there are a lot of people out there that have that are interested in buying original art but don't really know how to go
about doing it.
And honestly, a lot of original art dealers out there, their sites are really hard to navigate. It's hard to, you know, add stuff to a cart, figure out the pricing. Cadence has a really nice site and their pricing very easy to understand, how to add stuff to your cart. They ship worldwide, great customer service
wherever you are.
And if you're interested in any of those artists, I mean, you can buy stuff there. I think stuff ranges from like $70, $75 all the way up into the, you know, thousands for like sure. covers and that kind of stuff. All like Scotty's Wizard of Oz stuff is rep through Cadence. And I know that Mike has a lot of his Green Arrow Black Canary stuff up there and that kind of stuff. So it's a great original art dealer. So go check them out if you're interested in starting your own personal art collection or to build on what you already have. And if you do, tell them that we sent you.
Tell them that we did it.
So there you go. Well, Cadence Comic Art. Well, guys, would you want to wrap this one up and we'll come back next week with
Tom
some.
Does.
He does. We'll come back
next
week.
We got another episode to do, so let's do it.
With some emails. Serious Comic Talk. We'll go over some more voicemails and emails next week. But a lot of comic talk. Tom has a lot of stuff to talk about. Before we go, the last plug for the day. Promise. Windy City Comic Con, we are proud to announce that I mentioned Nate Powell, the Eisner winner for his graphic novel
Swallow Me Whole.
Yep. Swallow Me Whole.
Swallow Me Whole. I think I read that somewhere else.
And okay. And we are I've seen that movie. We are proud to announce that we have a new special guest, Mr. Richard Starkings.
Ooh, of Elephant Men.
Of Elephant Men fame.
Swallow Me Whole.
So yes, Richard is going to be coming out from LA. He'll be a special guest at the show.
Fantastic.
And I think we're going to have a panel with Richard.
Has he ever been to Chicago, or is it too flyover?
It's a flyover. So he actually asked me if Virgin Airlines flew here.
Actually, I think they do.
They do.
Because I was going to say, here's a major hub. Of
I don't know
they
if
do.
They. I don't know if they like fly. Yeah, we'll see if they fly here from LA or if they just go back and forth from London. So
that's a fair question. I'm not sure, but I think I've seen a Virgin Airlines terminal.
Oh
I'm
yeah,
sure.
yeah. You can fly to London on Virgin. So anyway, Richard Starkings really happy about it. We're going to put together a panel.
Excellent.
And I think John is going to do a word balloon live.
I think I will.
Which will basically a panel with Richard is like. Everyone, Richard Starkings.
Exactly. Starking Raving Mad. Exactly. Exactly. It's going to be called Starking Raving Mad.
I like
Starking
that.
Raving Mad. Like
bam. Idea.
We're going to have Tom, you are going to be doing a panel with me.
What? But this is going to be good.
We are going to do a Hero Initiative sketch jam. And we're going to have 8 to 10 of the hottest artists at the Windy City Con, and they're going to be doing 5-minute sketches.
We're going to
be taking requests improv style from the audience on 5-minute sketches, and all these guys are going to be sketch jamming, and then we're going to sell all the sketches to benefit Hero throughout the day.
Sketch jam! Can I do a just a game show announcer and go, here are your hosts, Chris Staceman and Tom Cater.
Sketch jam!
Exactly.
So it's going to be cool. Go to
brought to you by Red Dye Number 5. Yes, it kills, but that's okay. We still approve it.
So right. go to WindyCityComicCon.com for more details. We're going to have more information on the pre-party and post-party coming up real soon. And the guest list, I think we're at about 80, so I can't.
This is
you can't fit any more people into that.
I don't think that we can.
It's dangerous. If something happens in that building, all the comics in the Midwest will not come out.
Hey, we're pulling.
It's going to be huge problems. It's going to be mostly just coastal. You know, the East Coast liberals.
Chicago used to have this thriving community until that one incident at the Windy City Comic Con.
All right.
Was ever the same again.
You can listen to Tom 3 times a week as he runs you through the history of the DC Universe.
Thricely, you go through the history of Barry Allen.
I list everything that happens.
Ooh.
You can listen to the aforementioned 11 o'clock comics.
That is right. We are on at 11 o'clock. What are you drinking tonight?
I don't know.
I'm drinking a Cincinnati. I'm having a little delightful thing called Yingling. Black and tan.
Yes, we do.
Where I'm usually a little bit
Vince
drunker.
Is like, he's going to headbutt me like all weekend from when he said, yeah, funny Sutra's here.
he's going to have his head in a book of quarter.
Yeah. You
won't talk to him.
You aren't.
No, I know. I'm expecting a 5-word conversation with Vince.
You won't see Vince.
3 days.
Yeah, he'll have
you should confront him.
Oh, I'll confront him.
Oh, I'll come
don't
right
worry.
After him.
Bonavolio, get your head out of that box.
Get your head out of that box.
I got a sheen? What the hell does that mean? It still drives me crazy. Shaking my fist at you, Vince B.
All right. We'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. That would be you two. Everyone, lots of comics talk next week. We've got, as Tom said, months worth of comics to catch up on. So come back next Monday for another full-length episode.
I just recently read Amazing Fantasy 15.
Really? Ooh. How'd you like it?
There's a character called Spitterman.
Das Spitterman.
Delightful Jewish superhero.
I hear with a great response, or with great power comes great responsibility.
May, Ben, this is Peter. Hello.
I'm expecting Ben to show up in the next issue. Am I going to be disappointed? Is he really dead?
Yes. It's not a hoax. Not an imaginary tale. Not a hoax.
He might be a Black Lantern.
Sorry. All right. Ooh, that'd be good.
In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in.
And around.
And around.
Comics over there beside the yacht and my Black Lantern stuff.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
What did you ever do for the Purple Lantern?
Exactly. I want that guy to be a Black Lantern. That guy should come back.
Fuck you, babe.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. That means you, Suntress. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009. Yeah.